Welcome back, folks. Every Tuesday in the 11 o'clock segment, we feature folks that are involved in the NOLA Coalition, difference makers within our city. They, all the cliches, they're working in the trenches. They're doing great work. They're making a difference for us, making our city a lot better as well in so many different ways. And today's no different. We're joined by Kai Werder, Deputy Director of the Center for Restorative Approaches. Kai, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So, Kai, if you would, tell us a little bit about the Center for Restorative Approaches.
Yeah, so we are a local nonprofit. We've been around since 2008. Our CEO and founder, Troy Bechet, started the organization really to create an alternative to punitive response, primarily in our school system, right? And so our work started off really heavily in the school system here in Orleans Parish, working with school partners to help reduce their suspension and expulsion rates by offering something different. So we support young people through a process called Restorative Justice Circle, in which we bring together people who have been in a conflict that's escalating, where maybe harm has occurred, and we help them talk through what's happened, who all has been affected and how, and what they need to prevent it from happening again and to repair from the harm that has occurred. And so we've provided over 1,400 interventions over our course of existence, and 93 to 96% of them successfully reach agreement. And so, you know, that amount of time, we're having people who walk away from our processes feeling like their conflict has been resolved.
Anytime you have a success rate greater than 90%, it truly is a success. This is a lot about compelling people to sit down and communicate and look at each other in the eye and talk through a problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we recognize that, you know, sometimes people aren't ready to do that right away. And so our facilitators are trained to meet with participants one-on-one first to help them really get ready for that group conversation, right? Because talking about conflict is scary and can be really hard for a lot of people, especially when we have grown up in a society that is really punitive. And, you know, in Louisiana being the carceral capital of the world, a lot of people live in fear of talking about conflict because they're afraid that they're going to get punished or they're afraid that they're going to be disposed of or isolated. And so restorative approaches helps people stay connected through conflict. Even if that means they're not going to remain in relationship, how can they find a way to coexist maybe in the same school or in the same organization or community, right, while preventing violence from happening again?
Kai, is it really, though, about carceral influences, or is it really about stepping back and not letting your ego, yourself, stand in the way of dealing with this conflict and engaging in conflict resolution techniques? I mean, you know, a lot of this is stuff that you develop in the development of your moral compass at home in many respects.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would
and
say that it's both.
You emulate your parents and their ability to resolve conflict, whether it's between the spouses or the significant other.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you're getting right at it, right? Like, we learn through modeling, especially as young people. We find that, so we do training on restorative approaches as well. So we train people to be able to use these skills. And we find that young people are much quicker to pick up the process than adults because they don't have, like you're saying, all that decades worth of, you know, lessons on dealing with conflict in often maladaptive ways or in ways that escalate it instead of de-escalate it, right? And so young people, when they learn these skills, can then bring them into their lives going forward, right? And it boosts their confidence and is really about that ego work, like you're saying, right? A lot of conflict is actually our own inner work in how we then can carry that into our relationships.
Well, we in society today, and excuse my language, have tended to bastardize the meaning of respect. And respect is a two-way street. It's not a one-way gig, right?
Yeah, respect actually comes up as, you know, when we ask people what's important to them in Circle, respect comes up a lot of times, right? Like, people will often be in conflict maybe because they felt disrespected. And so what's important when you're talking about respect as it relates to conflict is understanding what respect looks like for each person, right? So, like, you might bring together, you know, a teacher and a student in a school who have been having tension in the classroom, and the teacher is like, yeah, the student isn't respecting my classroom, and the student maybe is feeling like they don't have a space to express themselves, right? So how can you meet both of those needs by coming up with agreements that can address those concerns, right? So when you're talking about respect, I think it's really important to get specific. What does it actually look like for you to feel respected, you know, as an educator? What does it look like for a student to feel respected, you know, showing up to class and engaging in the classwork, right? And so we, like, have this space where people can communicate more clearly with one another, instead of jumping to conclusions or making assumptions, which often can make a conflict worse.
I saw this approach for the first time in Missouri many, many years ago, decades ago, actually, in our juvenile reformation study that we were doing, and have been a big advocate of it. What was interesting to me as I watched the process unfold in the circle, so to speak, as you describe it, is what kids feared. And what was interesting also is they didn't fear the consequence. They feared more of their individual self in the way they were viewed by their peers. And I'm wondering if y'all have had a similar experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. We use a lot of role plays when we're practicing these skills in our trainings, and one of our role plays actually touches just on that, where, you know, a student gets accidentally bumped to the ground. It was, you know, another student was looking down, wasn't paying attention. They get bumped, someone falls to the ground, and then the student who falls starts a fight because they felt embarrassed, right, by their peers. You know, it was a busy hallway, their peers saw them fall down, and they felt embarrassed by that, right? And so that's about, how are your peers viewing you, and how do you need to kind of emulate something different? Again, coming back to respect, how do you need to show that you command respect, right, from your peers? So there's all of these social dynamics at play, especially with young people, that really play into how they are approaching conflict and why they're approaching conflict in the ways that they are, right? And so, a lot of it is about that perception. And because when you're young and you're in a contained social environment like a school, how you're perceived socially is really important, right? There's a lot of weight in that, because it impacts how people treat you and kind of how you're able to relate to one another.
Yep. So how many schools y'all are very proactive in the schools, and how many schools have actually embraced the program?
Yeah. So we have our program is going into its third year right now, called the Violence and Eruption Program. And that is funded by the City Health Department through its violence prevention work. And so it's available to any school in Orleans Parish, can send us a referral of a conflict that either has already escalated to the point of physical violence, or maybe the school is anticipating that something could escalate to that point, right? And so they want to prevent it from getting there. And so they can send us a referral. We'll send out a facilitator typically within one or two business days to the school to begin working with the students. Sometimes we'll bring in parents into the process as support people, or social workers or guidance counselors, deans, right? Whoever needs to be there to have input in the resolution process. And then we will convene a circle, you know, within a couple of weeks. And so that is available to any school in Parish, grades 6 through 12, and it comes at no cost to the school, because the program is funded through the health department. And so we've worked with a lot of schools over the past couple of years, and we hope to really expand that. We have three partnerships where we have facilitators actually embedded at the schools. So the facilitators are there for 8 hours a week at three schools in Orleans Parish, really kind of bringing this work and integrating it into the fabric of their school environment. And we see those schools really getting ahead of the conflicts, right? They are, because we've got a facilitator on site, they're really able to be more preventative in how they're approaching conflict between their students.
It was interesting, and I don't know if it's this, the same experience in Orleans now. Now I'm speaking back probably 10, 15 years ago. We had more suspensions out of middle school than we had out of high school. And I'm curious whether or not that, you know, if you're aware that they had a similar trend in Orleans and if that's still the case.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a current track on the suspension rates per se, but based on like middle school versus high school. But I will say we do get a substantial amount of referrals from middle schools, right? Yeah, it really is about trying to get in there and get in that preventative model before students are in active conflict so that they can stay in their school environment, so they can keep learning, right, and stay connected to the resources that that they need within their school system. So we have seen, you know, when we do this embedded work or when we're working more holistically with a school and doing, you know, our trainings to their staff and all of that, which we call a whole school implementation model, we've seen suspension rates drop as much as 60%, right? And so we can see how bringing this model and really integrating it into the policies and the procedures of the school can really create change over time, right? And really empower the school leaders to embrace alternative approaches than suspensions or expulsions.
Have y'all had, and I'm sure you have, where students themselves, as opposed to a referral by administration, student themselves reach out and say, hey, we need some help. Can y'all help us?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. I would say the schools where we are embedded and we have a facilitator on site and the students start to get to know, like, oh, facilitator Mr. J is here, and you know, they get to know his face, they get to know him as a person, and then we do see students saying, hey, we could actually use a conversation, like, oh, hey, I could use this right here right now in the, you know, in the lunchroom. And we also see students who go through our training be able to do that themselves, right, when they're in conflict, you know, when they have. We just launched our very first youth advisory board in May, and so we've got a group of 12 students who now are trained in restorative justice and will be bringing this to their peers, to their community, through a series of projects that they'll design. And so we see that when young people are given the tools, they really engage with them, with their peers, and they are more proactive in how they talk about conflict and really even just tensions or concerns or disagreements they have with their peers before it gets to the point of conflict.
What do y'all hear most often post-intervention, post-conversation, however you want to refer to it, from the kids themselves?
Yeah, so, you know, we've often heard, I don't feel like I have to look over my shoulder anymore. I feel safer going to school. You know, I feel more connected to my school environment. We hear from students that they loved being in Circle. It gave them a chance to express their feelings, that they felt heard and listened to, and they felt like they were understood, right? And so we see those responses even, you know, sometimes the resolution is that, you know, kids who were friends and then got into a fight and weren't friends anymore are able to reunite and like rekindle their friendship and relationship, right? And sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes a conflict happens and the resolution is just figuring out how to coexist. But we see those same results and responses from students, you know, whether their agreements are, you know, full repair for the relationship or just repair just enough to be able to, you know, kind of keep the peace and not have the conflict pop off again.
Does a lot of this or does your work transcend back to the familial unit in some cases?
You know that? Yeah, absolutely. We've actually had a handful of referrals since we started this program, our VIP program, that were conflicts between parents or grandparents that had been passed down. And the kids were like, I don't even know why I was fighting her. I just know that my family has a beef with her family, right? And so we, in those cases, have brought in the parents, right? And in some really powerful circles where there were, you know, between 15 to 25 participants, because we brought in parents and aunties and uncles into the process, that the parents are able to, you know, and those older generations are able to express themselves and to come to, like, let that kind of go, right? Let that old conflict fade out and to find a path forward, right? We also see often that parents can be role models in conflict. We've seen parents come together and, you know, they come to the circle. They don't even know who the other kids that are involved. And then they meet the other parents like, oh, I know you, right? I know you. And they model resolution for their young people, which is a really beautiful process to see.
Well, congratulations on the outcome thus far under this grant program. You know, as I said before, I was exposed to this approach many, many years ago. I think it works. Hopefully more schools embrace this. We have become such a disconnected society these days. More often than not because of that nasty thing they call a cell phone, where we can't figure out how to communicate with people anymore. And it's really a sad commentary, right? I mean, one piece of instrumentality has kind of disrupted the whole way that we socially interact, and we're feeling, I think, a lot of the pains as a result of that, not only that, but a lot of other things. But keep up the great work, and so glad that you joined us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on and to talk about our work. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Kai Werder, Deputy Director of the Center for Restorative Approaches. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Okunar Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Well, I was just viewing the lineup of culinary, and I am hungry. Kelly Schultz, Senior VP Communications and PR for New Orleans & Company, joins us. I'm at 144 of the 148 restaurants, and I'm dying here, Kelly.
Newell, I was just doing the same thing. These photos and menus are absolutely incredible. I am hungry also and ready to book some reservations.
There are not enough days in August, quite frankly.
No, there are not. If you look at, I mean, you know, over 140 restaurants now, and every neighborhood, every type of restaurant. I'll tell you, I love the way our restaurants get creative with their culinary menus. And these are some really spectacular meal options. And there's also this year the culinary cocktail element, which we've launched to celebrate culinary's 21st birthday.
I was seeing that as well, and some very interesting choices there, too. So culinary runs for the entire month of August, right?
That's correct. New Orleans & Company launched culinary now 21 years ago to really help boost the restaurants at a time when they need some extra help, which is the month of August. So everything kicked off on Friday the 1st, and it goes through August 31st. You can get a two-course lunch for $28 or less and a three-course dinner or brunch for $58 or less, which is pretty incredible. And again, the cocktail component is new. So some of the restaurants are offering custom cocktails. Some of them are doing, you know, two cocktails and two appetizers for $35. Really a good variety, and it's a great opportunity to try a new restaurant or maybe rediscover a restaurant that you haven't been to in a while. Of course, we promote this to visitors all over the country and the region, but this is pretty awesome for us as locals as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, and a lot of times if there's a great restaurant that you've not had the opportunity to try out, this is a great time to do it. My wife and I like to figure out which ones have bars. We really like to just, she and I, you know, dine at a bar. you know, at the restaurant. And we kind of do every year, we've kind of done that during culinary.
Exactly. I mean, I also love sitting at the bar, and maybe you all can try out the culinary cocktail part of it this year. And, you know, again, each restaurant kind of throws their own twist on it. And, you know, what they put on these menus are incredible. And a lot of the restaurants have told us, you know, that culinary has been very successful and helped increase their business. And that's our goal. So in addition to culinary, you know, we want people, locals and visitors, to do like you and your wife and go out and have a great meal, but also maybe plan a staycation. You know, think about taking advantage of some great hotel rates this month as well, and rediscover, you know, what a beautiful, historic, interesting city we live in. And, you know, maybe stay in a hotel downtown, do a couple of culinary meals, go to a museum, really just embracing, you know, this place that we're so fortunate to live. And millions of people are drawn to it every year as visitors. And sometimes we forget just how special it is right here in our own backyard.
Well, this weekend, for example, you could do culinary for lunch. You could then go do the Red Dress Run and then go back to your hotel and then go back out and then go to Dirty Linen all in one day.
That's right. You know, everyone talks about a summer slowdown. And I'll tell you, you know, with all the events you just described, last weekend we had White Linen Night. We had Satchmo, the 25th anniversary of Satchmo Summerfest. This summer, we've also had the UFC championship game, which was a big success and drew a lot of loyal sports fans here. We had 25,000 young people for the Lutheran convention that was here. So we're working really hard to get people into the city and drive them to our hotels and restaurants and cultural attractions and bring in as much business as we can. And then this week, we also have Pickle Fest and the Gymnastics Championships. So lots of options of things to do.
Yeah, I was at White Linen Night. It was packed. It was great to see.
Yeah.
We walked to where we parked, which was several blocks away from Julia Street. But, I mean, pretty much every restaurant, every bar was filled up. I mean, you know, it was just great to see the amount of people that turned out, because it was hot. I will say that.
Yeah.
It was a little toasty. You
know, it was a little toasty, and we also love to see packed galleries and restaurants and bars. I mean, that's our livelihood in this city is the hospitality industry, and so we're doing everything we can to fill those places. And you know, of course, it's hot here in August, but as you know, Newell, there's been record-breaking heat all over the country. So, you know, for those who are talking about New Orleans heat, there are many other destinations that are dealing with the same thing. So that's the nice thing about culinary and museum month is that you can experience many of these things in the air condition, but we're certainly not alone with the heat that's happening all over the country.
No, it was just great to see people dressed up and out and about and, you know, having a good time. And I'm sure Red Dress Run is always a big success, and Dirty Linen Night as well, you know, featuring the art galleries down on Royal Street, which is a great opportunity to visit those as well.
Exactly. I mean, the city is you know, looking cleaner than ever before in the French Quarter, and there are lots of great reasons to get out. I mean, that's what people love about New Orleans is that it's such a walkable city. I mean, everything is so compact, and the galleries and the restaurants and beautiful hotels are all very geographically convenient to each other. That's why people love coming here for events. And, you know, we're just working hard to make sure that we keep that up as we go into the fall, that we're staying busy and bringing in new events and boosting the current events that we do have. But August is really a great time. You know, I know people have back to school and lots of other things, but we're really encouraging locals this year, if you can, really go out and enjoy at least one meal at a culinary restaurant. They're every neighborhood, every type of restaurant, some new ones that maybe you've not experienced before, or it's a great time to just get back out into your neighborhood favorite. And really good food, and the restaurants certainly appreciate the support at this time of year.
Well, you know, we punch above our weight, right, with the number of restaurants that we have, the diversity of the offerings relative to the restaurants. And it's important that in the slow period of time, you know, and you guys have done an incredible job of creating these opportunities, that we actually execute on that opportunity, because it could make the difference. You know, I'm always saddened when I read about a restaurant that's shutting down. You know,
yeah,
sometimes it may be one that I haven't tried yet because, you know, the list is so long, you know, of trying new restaurants here. But it's sad to hear that, you know, and it's a way that you can make sure that we continue to punch above our weight.
Exactly. If you think about, you know, New Orleans population wise, the city itself is, you know, 400,000 people. That's a relatively small city. But if you think about the culture in the restaurants and the caliber of talent that we have in our hospitality community, we absolutely punch above our weight. And we would not be able to sustain this level of hospitality without the millions of visitors who come to. We are a relatively small city. You know, we love that Travel and Leisure magazine actually earlier this year named New Orleans the number two city in the country in terms of favorite city. This is something that the readers of Travel and Leisure, who are frequent travelers, vote on. They chose New Orleans as number two. If you were wondering, Santa Fe was number one, but
yeah,
New Orleans was number two, and we're happy to be in the number two spot. Charleston actually held that spot for many years, so we were happy to move up the list. Last year we were number five, and this year we were number two.
I have the greatest Santa Fe story, Kelly. We're in an art gallery, my wife and I, and we're buying a batik, which is, you know, a painting on silk, right? Mm-hmm. And we're talking to the lady. She's from Westwego. In an art gallery there in Santa Fe. We had a great time drinking a little wine with her, and just, you know, she hadn't been back home in a number of years, but it was just one of those moments, you know, when you
New Orleans
being so
everywhere.
Small. Yeah, but they're everywhere, man. They're like bad grass. They're all over the place. So what else do we have towards the end of the month of August?
Well, you know, you talked about this coming weekend. We've got Red Dress Run. We have the Dirty Linen Night. This week is the third annual Pickle Fest with Drew Brees. We've got the
Pickleball. That's right.
Pickleball, yeah. Fest, which is happening actually the 6th through the 10th of this month. That's over at the Convention Center. And I know you've done that event before. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We're already in the third annual event. And then also this week is the gymnastics championships. So this is the first stop along the road to the Los Angeles 2028 Olympic Games. So that is happening this week as well over at the Smoothie King Center. And it's a great opportunity, again, you know, get tickets to this event, maybe do a culinary meal beforehand. All of that information is at neworleans.com. And then later in the month, you know, Southern Decadence Fest is always a big draw for New Orleans over the Labor Day weekend as we get closer to the end of the month.
But Labor Day's early this year, too, September 1st, right?
It is. So Southern Decadence Fest actually starts on August 29th. We are going to sort of have the eyes of the world on us that day as well for the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. So we're working to help tell some positive stories about our city's recovery and progress in the past 20 years, especially as a hospitality destination. There's a lot of many good news stories to tell there as we commemorate that anniversary. But all throughout August, you can do culinary runs through the 31st and Museum Month as well. If you're a member of a museum locally, you can get access to all of the other participating museums at no cost during the month of August. So just like the restaurants, if you haven't been to some of our amazing museums in the city, you can take advantage of Museum Month. New this year is a passport. So that sort of encourages people to visit multiple museums, and they can get their passport stamp and have a chance to win prizes. So always trying to add new twists and ways to engage with people.
Absolutely. You know, we are going to be broadcasting live on August the 29th. Tommy Tucker, myself, Scoot, with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. They're doing a new presentation and offering at the State Museum in the quarter relative to the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And there'll be a number of people that they're bringing in from around the country that were in, you know, some of those big jobs with the federal government and otherwise for panel discussions about the recovery of the city of New Orleans. So we're looking forward to that as well.
And there's so many good things to, I know it's a very solemn anniversary, but there are many, many good things to celebrate that day as well.
No doubt. Kelly, as always, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Kelly Schultz, Senior VP Communications and PR at New Orleans and Company. Maybe we'll see you at a culinary restaurant. Who knows?
Yes, let me know where you go, where you decide to go with all these incredible menus. Thanks, Newell.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great week. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Got a lot of texts about when I said that I'm saddened when restaurants close. And a number of folks have texted in saying, well, it would be nice if you did a monologue or even a segment about what they refer to as circus vendors that are allowed to set up around establishments that are here year round, and competing against them would be great. And I don't disagree with you. And in fact, I will see if I can't get somebody from the council or otherwise to explain to me how they decide these food vendors during Mardi Gras and other big events, where the location is going to be. Because I scratch my head when they're sitting right outside a restaurant that sells something very similar. Why would you allow that to happen? It's all about coordination. Not that these vendors are not needed, because they are, in order to feed the masses. But they can be in different locations as opposed to sitting square at the front door of a restaurant, right? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But that's all about preparation. I suggest you call your council person and let them know that you're displeased with the location that they're given to these folks every year. And then added to that, you got those are the permitted people. What about the unpermitted people that are floating around and just they set up their operation wherever they feel like they want to? They're not collecting any sales tax. They're not doing any of that. They're not contributing to the economy of the city because they don't have their health certificates. They don't have sales tax permits. They don't have any of that. They just decide this is good for me. Must be good for everybody else, and we'll go about our business. I mean, we're about to start the NFL season. You're going to see a whole lot of this. It's always mind-numbing to me why we wouldn't have sales tax agents going out there and asking them for their sales tax number. You can have them pay you. You can issue a daily sales tax permit, and you can set an arbitrary assessment, and they're going to have to pay, and they're going to have to prove how much they should be paying. And you'll remedy this problem real easy, real easy. We just don't have the will sometimes. It drives me crazy, and we wonder, it's hard enough for restaurants to make it without some of the silly things that we allowed to go on in and around those restaurants. I agree with you. I've talked about it a lot over the years. I'll continue to talk about it. It doesn't make any sense to me. But that's only one of the issues that doesn't make any sense. When we come, we will be right back, folks. Stay with us. On a text line, you have a guy on the corner of Porges and Loyola as we speak, selling plate lunches out of the back of his pickup truck with drinks. I just passed him there minutes ago. There you go. Maybe if somebody with the city's listening, they may want to stop by and see if he's collecting sales taxes. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, Liz Murrell, Louisiana's Attorney General, joins us. We'll talk about this NOLA ID, the Judge Derbigny courtroom mess, and the Medicaid fraud arrest and other issues as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back with the Attorney General.